welcome to this episode of What Will I Be When I Grow Up? Our guest today is Dr. Tura Akarsu, who is an assistant professor in marketing at Southampton Business School and the program leader for the MSc in Digital Marketing. Tura is a member of the Center for Marketing Research and a fellow of the Higher Education Academy. She completed her BA with honors in business administration at Koç University in Istanbul and received a master's degree in business administration from Kadir Has University, also in Istanbul, where she worked both as a graduate research assistant and a research fellow in various funded projects. She subsequently joined Middlesex University in London and gained a PhD in business whilst being a recipient of the Dean Excellence Scholarship. Thank you so much for taking the time to be with us here today. Tura, how are you?
I'm fine. Thank you so much. You know, first of all, I would like to say it's lovely to be here and thank you for inviting me to this wonderful podcast.
So we're in very different climates. I can tell our listeners can't see you, but I can say to them that you're wearing a jumper because it's -4 in Southampton, a little bit different to Malaysia.
True.
So I don't know if you have listen to the podcast, you'll probably know that I normally like to start the podcast by asking my guests to tell me a little bit about themselves. And we're particularly interested in, you know, kind of like your childhood influences and some of the experiences that have influenced you to become the person that you are today.
Sure. I think that's a good place to start. So first of all, I was born and raised in Antalya, Turkey. So it's a city located on the Mediterranean coast of southwestern Turkey, and it's known for its, you know, natural beauty and rich history and vibrant culture. My parents, they're both food engineers, and they have their own company where they produce and sell industrial types of fruit juices. So basically fruit juices that are produced and, you know, on a large scale for commercial sale and distribution. Therefore, I can say I was born into a family where they were constantly, and that's why I was surrounded by all sorts of individuals that are working with and for my parents. I remember I used to go to their office after school and have lots of time to read, to have my adventures, you know, on my own at their office space. And my early memories are generally at my parents' office, listening to their meetings and their conversations. So I would say, I guess I learned what sales and marketing were at a very early age. So, you know, generally children of working parents, they may have less parental involvement or, you know, perhaps a feeling of disconnection. But in my case, because both of my parents were working, so I had, you know, I wouldn't feel that sort of disconnection. So on the contrary, I would say it kind of provided me with some sort of, you know, emotional maturity and resilience because I had to adapt, you know, their busy schedules and absence. So yeah, I think this is kind of my childhood influence. So, you know, growing up with a working family culture had a significant influence on whom I became today. You know, not only growing in this such an environment, but I used to work with them as well. So I remember, you know, working at food and beverage exhibitions with my parents, you know, as a translator when I was a high school student and taking notes for them and discussing them, you know, the next day. So there was always an action at the workplace and I was always a part of it. And as a positive aspect of this exposure, I learned to, you know, take care of myself. And, you know, when it comes to school, I was good at managing my time and resource and make, you know, better decisions.
That's so cool. Because I do think that we don't realize how much of an influence our parents can be on our lives, right? Like my sister and I always joke about this, like, how did we both end up in education? Because, you know, our parents, they're retired now, but they were both teachers. And I think our parents really wanted us to kind of get away from education and do something else. And it's so funny that, you know, kind of inevitably we've both landed in education and that kind of childhood influence sticks with you. I think it's super cool that your parents got you involved, you know, when you were like 15, 16. I think that kind of experience is really invaluable. Not many people have the chance to do that. So that's really cool. Because the next question I was going to ask you really was around, you know, how you decided to pursue business administration as your kind of subject at university, because you did both a degree and a master's in it. Was it influenced by this experience of working with your parents from a young age?
Sure. I have actually a very interesting story on this. So, you know, in Turkey, we have a higher education institution examination, which is conducted by the Higher Education Council. So basically, in order to enable students to be placed in higher education programs, this is the only way to enter the university. So you have to take the exam, right? So moving from high school to university, I was quite passionate in history. I think that's kind of, you know, influence of the city I was born, science and art, not business or marketing. So I decided to study something that might stimulate my intellectual curiosity. So I studied my bachelor's degree in business administration at Koç. And back then, my major was built upon, you know, a broad foundation in liberal arts. So basically, while understanding, you know, marketing, management, accounting, and finance, we were kind of allowed to take, you know, other modules from the other areas or, you know, to explore our areas of interests. For example, you know, taking courses from the Department of History, Law, Engineering, or even Philosophy. And I think that's why while I was studying, I even did a minor in history. And I took some courses, for example, in business and law, you know, at University of Berkeley, so Haas Business School. So basically, I had a very well-rounded education. But when it comes to, you know, when it comes to the closer to the graduation, I was 22 and it wasn't clear to me, you know, if I wanted to work professionally or pursue a PhD degree to become an academic. So I had no idea. And to be honest, I was more, you know, looking to advance my resume for, you know, upper level management positions and leadership positions, not for local, but more of a global opportunities too. So that's why I started applying for MBA programs. And in Kadir Has University, the reason why I got in, because I was accepted to the program, and then they offered me a research assistantship position. So I said, why not? You know, I thought it would be, you know, a good working experience while completing my degree. And I think that was kind of the turning point of my career. So I started working with academics on their research projects. There was particularly one project with an academic. So we were looking at the firm performances and corporate social responsibility for the companies that are listed in the stock exchange. And I worked as a, you know, research fellow in this position. And that research experience kind of opened my eyes up to the new way of doing things. So, you know, starting from my undergraduate degree till my MBA, I was always exploring different courses and different modules. And I think being exposed to that research activity in particular, and, you know, to see how academics look and, you know, look at the world and investigate business problems and real world problems was kind of like an eye-opening experience for me. So I kind of remember when I was working in that project, I sent an email to my dissertation supervisor next day and I said, you know, I wanted to work on a research question that matters to me. So literally the next day, I was sitting with my dissertation supervisor and, you know, looking at the questions, the research questions, my research interest that matters to me. So just after a couple months of this discussion, I started applying for the PhD degrees. So this is how it kind of, you know, triggered me to pursue a PhD degree in marketing after having, you know, an undergraduate in business administration, an MBA degree. So this is how it happened, basically.
Yeah, that's super interesting because I was going to ask you really like whether you did any, you know, work in industry before kind of making that transition to the PhD. But in this conversation so far, I can gather that you've always kind of had your finger on the pulse, right? You've always kind of had some involvement in industry, whether it was, you know, being that 15-year-old attending trade shows with your parents, but also equally as you were doing your degree and your master's, that kind of involvement in real life experiences and real life industry seems to be a theme in your career so far. So you've kind of explained how you decided that, you know, you wanted to pursue this PhD, and obviously you went on to Middlesex University to do that. What was that sort of, I mean, moving away from the academic, well, we can talk about the academic experience too, but in terms of that personal life experience of leaving your home country and moving to the UK, what was that like for you? What were some of the highlights and some of the difficulties that you experienced from a personal perspective?
I should admit that's a very good question. And just because I literally came back from Turkey from my Christmas break, I was actually thinking about this. you know, moving from a country can be both exhilarating and I think daunting. And I still remember the day that I arrived to the UK for my PhD when I was literally 24 years old. And the part that shocked me the most was to see how friendly everyone seemed here, you know? So to be friendly, I didn't have a culture shock when I moved to UK, but I'm now realizing that I'm kind of experiencing a reverse culture shock every time I go back to Turkey, you know. On returning to your home country, you know, you don't generally expect to feel like a foreigner, which is exactly how I started to feel, you know, during the 9 years I spent in the UK. Of course, I got used to, you know, for example, how people drive, how people shop, and all those little small things that are embedded in the country's culture. And every time I go back, I'm realizing how much I have integrated the life here. So it's kind of a strange feeling. I don't know if I can explain, but, you know, it hits me at the most random times, I would say. For example, you know, when you are sitting in the bus in Turkey, you know, you can hear all the conversations that's going around. And, you know, in Turkey, it's not very uncommon to meet someone at the bus stop and instantly learn, you know, where they are coming from, how old they are, or, you know, some random family occasions, they might even invite you to their, you know, traditional, you know, gatherings and everything. So, you know, it can be quite overwhelming at times to feel how you're kind of losing that connection with your own culture throughout the years. So I think that was the, you know, that was the most important thing for me to just like realize the culture shock. Yes, you know, you expect, but reverse culture shock was quite, you know, interesting for me. So I would say this is one of the highlights, you know, I can explain here.
Did you find the way of teaching and learning difficult to adapt to, given that you'd done your undergrad and your master's in Turkey, and then you were moving into the UK education system for your PhD?
It was a bit different because in Turkey, you know, we have a different system. But the universities I have studied, they have kind of an American system. So integrating into the UK higher education system wasn't so hard for me. I think the reason was because I was working as the research assistant when I was doing my PhD too. So my, you know, dissertation supervisors and other academics at Middlesex University, they helped me a lot to understand what is going on or, you know, how should I, you know, integrate that life. So that was kind of a nice smooth transition for me, even though I came here, you know, a bit late. It was all fine, thanks to those academics, you know, who helped me on the way.
So it sounds like it was a pretty supportive environment, you know, for when you were doing your PhD. And I guess it's the same now as a, you know, member of academic staff in the business school. Because a couple of months ago, I interviewed one of your colleagues who's the director of the MBA program. And it just sounds like the business school is a very kind of vibrant, exciting place to be part of as an academic.
Yeah, definitely. At University of Southampton, we have a wonderful business school. I'm not just saying that just because I'm here. We are very collegial and there is always the buzz going on, you know, like once in every week, you can find a research activity, a presentation, a workshop that is going on. It doesn't matter if it's in another department, because in business school, we have, you know, different departments. So for example, I'm a member of digital and data-driven marketing department. So, you know, you can always attend to other workshops and talk to other colleagues in even the hallway. So we are kind of very collegial, very friendly here. And I like this kind of culture when it comes to academia. I think this is how it should be.
Yeah, that's really good. I mean, and that's the kind of information I guess students are looking for as well, right? Like when they, you know, go to university, they want that experience. They want to know that they're coming to a place that's friendly and welcoming. I think it's really interesting, like that you were surprised that British people were really friendly. I think it's true, right? Because I remember it as well. Like when I first left Malaysia as a young person to go to university, you're told that it's going to be so different. And then when you get there, you're like, oh, they're just people too, you know? And I found the people that I met at university, whether it was my professors or, you know, my course mates, to be really friendly and welcoming. So I think that's a good thing about the UK education system. So you now kind of focus, you've already sort of mentioned it a little bit. A lot of your work is in marketing and kind of digital marketing. But when I was reading your profile, the thing that struck me was this thing called sensory marketing. So do you think you could tell us a little bit about what sensory marketing is?
Oh, sure. So in a nutshell, sensory marketing is a type of marketing strategy that aims to engage, you know, consumers' five senses. So for example, sight, sound, smell, taste, and touch, to create a positive and memorable experience. So that's kind of the definition of what sensory marketing is. And the main goal of sensory marketing is to create basically an emotional connection with the customer, which can lead to increased, you know, brand loyalty and sales. For example, we know by experience that, you know, retail stores often use sensory marketing to create an inviting and a pleasant shopping experience. Let's say you're visiting a, you know, food brand or stores. They often use, you know, sensory marketing. For example, a fast food restaurant, you know, you can actually smell that frying food to entice consumers, or a coffee shop. For example, they can use, you know, the aroma of freshly brewed coffee to attract consumers. And I bet you started smelling coffee aroma as we speak. So that's kind of, you know, a sensory marketing to you. So my PhD research was more on understanding the psychological mechanism of sensory marketing. For example, how sociocultural traits such as belief or values interplay consumers' perception of sensory marketing while brands are trying to create a positive and memorable brand experience. But of course, when we look at the digital world, I think the inevitable happened, and sensory marketing has evolved to include virtual and augmented reality experiences, and also as well as interactive digital, you know, displays. So if we give an example, brands are now able to create an immersive experience for consumers by leveraging technology. For example, it can be a virtual reality headset. Or sometimes we actually can see and experience a virtual reality technology that allow us to try on products, right, before we purchase it. Or the use of interactive digital displays to showcase the product in an engaging way. So this is kind of where I am right now. With the increasing integration of sensory marketing and digital technology, I'm trying to understand how, for example, digital innovations, such as, you know, design or service-related cues, influence end users in different market models, such as sharing economy, and how do that impact consumers' opinion and behavior. So this is what I'm doing right now. I started with, you know, very traditional sensory marketing strategies, like lights and smell and aroma. But now with the integration of digital technology, I think that was inevitable, obviously. Now my research is kind of, you know, evolving in a way towards more to digital marketing and, you know, the combination of sensory marketing.
Yeah, I saw something online recently that I thought was fascinating. Because like one of, so for example, I love to shop. Like, I'm not going to lie. It's like a known fact that I love to shop. But something like shoes, right? It's a bit tricky to buy shoes online because it's, you know, something might say that it's a European size 38, but because of the shape of the shoe or whatever, it may not fit you perfectly. But I saw something recently where you could actually try on the shoe in a sort of VR situation. And I just thought, like, wow, my mind was really blown, right? I thought, wow, that's amazing that I don't have to go into the store to try on the shoe. I can actually, you know, they've provided this technology for you to try it.
You're definitely right. You know, the way the brands are leveraging the technology to provide an immersive sensory marketing, I think it kind of has opened a new opportunities for brands to create immersive, personalized, and, you know, interactive experiences for customers. So definitely, you know, and I think this kind of is impacting the success of campaigns and, you know, a customer experience too. So I think we're going to see more, you know, immersive and interactive experiences in terms of sensory marketing with the, you know, increasing technology and interaction with the technology, to be honest.
Yeah, no, it's really cool. Obviously, we at Mavex do run quite a lot of digital marketing campaigns. And, you know, we're constantly trying out new platforms to engage with our students and their parents. How would you say is the best way to measure the success of a digital marketing campaign? And, you know, what sort of platforms do you think we'll be looking at in the future for an organization like ours, right, which is not retail? It's really kind of service industry. We're trying to work collaboratively with students to help them with their application process and all of that. So what, do you have any thoughts on this?
That's a very good question, Davina. To be honest, you know, sometimes measuring the success of a digital marketing campaign can be a very tricky task for businesses. But of course, it's essential to understand, you know, the impact of, for example, your efforts to make, you know, data-driven decisions about the strategy. So I guess one of the most important things to consider is to identify the key performance indicators that will give you an insight into how well your campaigns are performing. So these key performance indicators should align with the business's overall goals and objectives. For example, let's say your goal is to increase your website's traffic or your podcast traffic, right? Then you should measure how many visitors you had in a given time frame, or what percentage of visitors to your podcast or to your website leaves only after, for example, listening one podcast, right? Or for example, if your goal is to generate leads, then you should track the actions that matter to your business. Depending on the nature of your business, it could be the number of form submissions, it could be online bookings, it could be calls. But when it comes to the platform, I think it's essential to understand where your target audience is most active. For example, if you're targeting younger demographic, social media platforms like Instagram, TikTok might sound like a good fit, right? If you're targeting a B2B audience, straight away, people will say, you know, LinkedIn or other business, you know, other professional platforms. However, to be certain where your target audience lies in terms of social media, or which channel or which platform you should invest in reach to your audience requires a comprehensive market insight. This is what I think. So if we think about and talk about the future, I think businesses should keep an eye on the emerging platforms. For example, now the marketers, the digital marketers, and I'm sure you've also heard of it, are talking super apps like WeChat. And we are expecting to see, you know, those super apps in the West as well. So we are talking about voice assistants or augmented reality, and of course, AI-assisted platforms and softwares. So all of these will definitely help businesses to create a new and a more engaging experience, which will drive more conversion, definitely. You know, today's hot topic is AI. Everyone is talking about, you know, how AI will revolutionize digital marketing and, you know, the digital marketing campaigns. And, you know, today we are seeing a lot of AI-assisted tools, for example, for content marketers, you know, or for you, you know, for a podcast host. But of course, you know, we will see more on AI and how AI is helping digital marketers in terms of personalization, automation, optimization, and, you know, helping digital marketers to have some sort of predictive analysis, you know, on consumer behavior. So this is what I think about the future. So I'm quite optimistic and I'm quite excited, I guess, you know, to see where it goes and how will it be.
Yeah, we're excited too, right? Like, you know, just kind of thinking about all the different ways in which we can engage with students. And this podcast was just something that we decided to do. I have a friend who's quite a well-known podcaster, and she said to me, you know, this is a really great way to create content that's valuable for students. And I really dragged my feet for quite a long time because I'm like, I'm not a podcast host. This would be really weird. But I'm so glad we were doing it, because clearly we can see that students are engaging with this kind of content because of the types of people that we're interviewing, like yourself, right? You know, so I think it's important for us, whatever area of, you know, kind of industry we're in, to keep up with the different ways in which we can engage with people. We're actually planning a whole podcast and a series of articles on ChatGPT.
ChatGPT, right? Yeah.
What is happening, right? Anyway, there's so much to think about, which is exciting times to be living in, right? So you're the program leader for the MSc in digital marketing. So for students who are kind of interested in this kind of course, like, what would you say would be the benefits of pursuing an MSc in digital marketing?
Definitely. That's a very good question. So I recently appointed as the program leader for MSc Digital Marketing, but I have been teaching digital marketing related modules for several years. So I can talk about our program here at Southampton. So we kind of cover a wide range of topics, from digital marketing planning and strategy to hands-on web analytics or search engine optimization and social media marketing. What makes our program different than other MSc digital marketing programs is that, as I mentioned before, we are a digital and data-driven marketing department. So that's why we offer a very hands-on and practical modules, such as, for example, managing design and web development, where our students learn how to develop, promote, and maintain a successful website or a web application. And having different modules, different hands-on modules, such as digital analytics or digital marketing applications, enable our students to focus on areas specific interest and develop their specialized skill set, basically. And we also offer our students to network with industry professionals, including, you know, working as digital marketing consultants, which I would like to give an example. In a module that I teach last year, for example, students were working as digital marketing consultants for companies in Canada and San Francisco, where they had an opportunity to deliver an in-depth research for the company's real-life challenges and barriers. And then they came up with the plans on, you know, search engine optimization, improving, you know, UX design, digital display advertising, and influencer marketing. I think, and I believe this is rather a fact, that digital marketing is constantly growing, right? And there is a definitely high demand for professionals with advanced skills and knowledge in this area. And I think having an MSc digital marketing can open up a wide range of career opportunities, including roles in digital marketing, e-commerce, social media, web analytics. And I believe this is a very valuable investment for seriously anyone interested in pursuing a career in digital marketing, you know, understanding the field in depth and, you know, a wide range of career opportunities. So that's why I believe this is going to be a hot area, you know, digital marketing for the next decade and so. And this is going to be very important for students to understand what is going on and what is changing in every minute.
Yeah, that's it, isn't it? Changing in every minute. That's, I think, in some ways, as a kind of millennial, the idea of things changing every minute scares me a little bit, but we just have got to roll with the punches, I suppose. I only have two more questions for you, really, coming to the end of this conversation. Looking back on your life and your career, do you think there's anything that you might do differently?
Oh, gosh. That's a very tricky question. So when I look back on my life, I believe everything happens, you know, in our life for a reason, good or bad. So what's done is done. I wouldn't change a thing because, you know, the good things and bad things, probably they have encouraged me to do more good, you know, probably my mistakes and my failures helped me to improve myself. So I don't know if I changed anything, to be honest. Probably I would travel more, you know. But yeah, I think that's it.
Yeah, that's cool. I mean, it's really interesting. I was talking to some of my colleagues today about the past and, you know, kind of some mistakes that I've made in my life. And yeah, okay, you know, maybe I could have been better or I could have maybe responded differently in a particular situation. But I kind of think like if I hadn't done that, then I wouldn't have learned how to be better in particular types of relationships. And that transcends not just like romantic relationships, but like in work and with your friends and all of that, right? Like it's a really big part of growth, I think. And, you know, it's interesting. I've interviewed quite a lot of people now for this podcast. And I would say 95% of them say they wouldn't change anything, that they would like, you know, be... They understand the value of what they've learned from the mistakes that they made. But hey, listen, you can still travel.
Definitely.
Yeah. Years ahead now to travel. And please come visit us in Malaysia. We'd love that.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah. So, and my last question really is any kind of last thoughts or advice for young people who are considering what they will be when they grow up?
That's a very good question indeed. You know, in every semester, what I do is at the last session, I kind of just have a chat with students about the food for thought. So I guess when it comes to figuring out what you want to be when you grow up, it's tricky, you know. From my experience, I could say it's important to remember your career choice is not set in a stone. So you will have the opportunity to change and grow throughout your life. So I think they shouldn't be afraid to take risks and try new things, first of all. And I would say they should think about their passions and interests. So what are the things, for example, they excite them and make them feel alive, right? So if the chances are, if you're passionate about something, you'll be more likely to enjoy your work and be successful. So there's no harm in that, right? And this is kind of an advice from my father. And this is what he pushed me and encouraged me to do, to learn about different careers and industries, to talk to people who work in different fields and that interest you, shadow them, you know, just gain a hands-on experience through, for example, internships, just, you know, listen their experience, what they have done. This will give you a better understanding, I think, you know, of the day-to-day work is like, you know, and help you to make an informed decision. So, and obviously, maybe just because I'm Turkish, but remember that you are in charge of your own destiny. So don't let anyone else, you know, to dictate what you should do or be. So you have, you know, all the power that you can create your life in a way you want. So don't limit yourself and always be open to the new opportunities, I guess.
Do you think that's an especially Turkish way of looking at the world, that you are in charge of your own destiny?
I think because I was a Turkish girl who came to the UK when I was 24, you know, and kind of, you know, this is what happened to me. So my parents always encouraged me to be like, you know, an independent person. So this is kind of an advice that I got from my parents. So, you know, go talk to others, you know, experience the world, you know, travel more, do more. So be an open-minded person. I believe that's like how the modern Turkish families are in these days, you know, encouraging more their kids to do more, to travel more, you know, be more open-minded, you know, self-reliant.
Yeah, I think it's really a wonderful way to kind of view the world, to go out there, to explore it, to try new things. I mean, my parents were the same, and I'm always really grateful for that, you know. And I think sometimes when you say, you know, a girl leaving your country for the first time, I left when I was 18, 19. I was super young when I left Malaysia. But yeah, I think my parents never sort of made me feel like as a woman, I couldn't do anything. I could do anything. I could be anyone. And I, you know, kind of have taken that with me. And I really like try to spread that with the students that I meet and like, you know, young people that I meet. I'm like, yeah, you can do it. And I always feel like if I can do it, anyone can do it. Just try. Yeah,
exactly. This is kind of my advice to my students, I guess, you know, at the end of every module, you know, they always ask me, so, okay, Tura, what should we do about our resumes? Where should we, you know, apply? I said, you know, forget about digital marketing, first of all. Just think about, you know, where your interests are. What is your passion? You know, what makes you happy in this life? And then decide, you know, where you want to go, what you want to be. So, you know, it's not the end of the world if you just, you know, stay and travel for a year or so. So this is what I do as well, but you're definitely right. You know, it's really important. And I think this is what shaped us, you know, leaving the home country and family when we're kind of young.
Yeah, I always say going abroad changed my life. I became a very different person to the person I might have been if I had stayed. So yeah, great. Thank you so much. It's been a real pleasure chatting with you today, Tura. Like, I feel like I've learned a lot. I now understand what sensory marketing is. Maybe Jennifer, we can introduce this into the work that we do. Yeah, sorry, listeners. Jennifer is our lovely head of marketing who is always here at every podcast recording to make sure that I don't make a mess of it. So thank you so much, Tura. Lovely to see you. And really, do come and visit us in Malaysia whenever you have the opportunity. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Davina. It was a pleasure for me to attend the podcast and I really enjoyed it. So I'm also, you know, waiting for you to visit me in Southampton.
I will. Absolutely. Thank you so much. Bye.
Bye.